Hello, this is the listening part of your Year 12 exam in English. It will consist of three tasks. You will hear the texts twice. Task 1. You have a minute to read the task. This month at the Bristol Museum, there's an exhibition by the British artist Banksy, which is causing something of a sensation. The reason for this is that nobody thought Banksy would have an exhibition like this. So today we're talking about Banksy and what makes him so special. So Richard, why does the exhibition seem so unusual?
Well, Banksy isn't someone who creates pieces of art for people to buy and sell. He's a street artist, he's a graffiti artist. So his work can be seen on the sides of buildings, alongside rivers, on walls, mainly in city centres. He's become something of an urban legend. His work isn't the traditional graffiti, you know, sprayed on walls. They're images, which often have a hidden message. They make you stop and look again. I think they're quite clever. Graffiti artists just usually write their names, but he actually does paint pictures, and they're often very funny.
That's true, but painting on public walls is illegal, isn't it?
Yes, of course, it's illegal. And so Banksy has done two things to avoid getting caught. For the first thing, he's remained anonymous. No one really knows who he is. We don't even know what his real name is. Banksy is just a pseudonym.
And what's the second thing he does to avoid getting caught?
Well, secondly, he doesn't just paint on walls. He has this technique using stencils. So that means he can do the pictures very quickly. He prepares the images in advance, and then he just quickly sprays through the stencils onto the wall. So it's a different technique, and it is real art, I think. There's a lot of his work on the streets in Bristol, and in London too. In fact, one of his early works that made him quite famous is on the wall of a main street in Bristol. The council in Bristol asked residents if they wanted it to stay, or if people didn't like it, and they would get rid of it. But apparently nearly everyone said they wanted it to stay. If you go to Bristol, you can still see it.
That's interesting. What about other cities in the world?
He's done some huge paintings in the United States. A popular Banksy symbol is the rat, and he's got some gigantic rat images on walls in New York.
Lots of rats. But monkeys are popular with him too, aren't they?
Yes, and actually a lot of his work is political. But it's anti-establishment, anti-war, anti-capitalist and things like that. But the question remains, is it unlawful vandalism like so much graffiti?
Well, one of the things, do you remember, Richard, I didn't like about Madrid was all the graffiti. So it does seem hypocritical to say I like Banksy's work, because he is, after all, a graffiti artist. I don't know, but I feel it's got more of a point somehow, and I enjoy the messages.
Yes, that's the problem, isn't it? It's a point of view. Is it unlawful vandalism, or is it inspirational artwork? I think it's art. But what do our listeners think? Are people like Banksy artists and therefore maybe get lots of money for their works? Or are they vandals? Or maybe even both? So we'd love to hear from you.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time. This month at the Bristol Museum, there's an exhibition by the British artist Banksy, which is causing something of a sensation. The reason for this is that nobody thought Banksy would have an exhibition like this. So today we're talking about Banksy and what makes him so special. So, Richard, why does the exhibition seem so unusual?
Well, Banksy isn't someone who creates pieces of art for people to buy and sell. He's a street artist, he's a graffiti artist. So his work can be seen on the sides of buildings, alongside rivers, on walls, mainly in city centres. He's become something of an urban legend. His work isn't the traditional graffiti, you know, sprayed on walls. They're images, which often have a hidden message. They make you stop and look again. I think they're quite clever. Graffiti artists just usually write their names, but he actually does paint pictures, and they're often very funny.
That's true, but painting on public walls is illegal, isn't it?
Yes, of course, it's illegal. And so Banksy has done two things to avoid getting caught. For the first thing, he's remained anonymous. No one really knows who he is. We don't even know what his real name is. Banksy is just a pseudonym.
And what's the second thing he does to avoid getting caught?
Well, secondly, he doesn't just paint on walls. He has this technique using stencils. So that means he can do the pictures very quickly. He prepares the images in advance, and then he just quickly sprays through the stencils onto the wall. So it's a different technique, and it is real art, I think. There's a lot of his work on the streets in Bristol, and in London too. In fact, one of his early works that made him quite famous is on the wall of a main street in Bristol. The council in Bristol asked residents if they wanted it to stay, or if people didn't like it, and they would get rid of it. But apparently nearly everyone said they wanted it to stay. If you go to Bristol, you can still see it.
That's interesting. What about other cities in the world?
He's done some huge paintings in the United States. A popular Banksy symbol is the rat, and he's got some gigantic rat images on walls in New York.
Lots of rats. But monkeys are popular with him too, aren't they?
Yes, and actually a lot of his work is political. But it's anti-establishment, anti-war, anti-capitalist, and things like that. But the question remains, is it unlawful vandalism like so much graffiti?
Well, one of the things, do you remember, Richard, I didn't like about Madrid was all the graffiti. So it does seem hypocritical to say I like Banksy's work, because he is, after all, a graffiti artist. I don't know, but I feel it's got more of a point somehow, and I enjoy the messages.
Yes, that's the problem, isn't it? It's a point of view. Is it unlawful vandalism, or is it inspirational artwork? I think it's art. But what do our listeners think? Are people like Banksy artists and therefore maybe get lots of money for their works? Or are they vandals? Or maybe even both? So we'd love to hear from you.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task one. Go on to task two. You have a minute to read the task.
I'm speaking to Steve. Steve lives and works in Japan, in Tokyo, is that right?
Yeah, in Tokyo.
How long have you been living in Tokyo for?
About 6 months.
But it's not your first time in Japan, is it?
No, I lived there from 1989 to 1996, so I left Japan about 10 years ago, last time.
Okay, so over that 10-year break, going back again, have you seen many changes to Japan?
Yes and no. A lot of people keep telling me how much Japan has changed in that time, but to be honest, I'm more struck by how similar it is in many ways. I mean, a lot of the shops and the restaurants have changed hands and so on and so forth. And in Tokyo, a lot of the buildings have come down and new ones have gone up.
And different kinds of buildings have gone up?
Well, I think the thing about Tokyo, or the thing about Japanese cities in general probably, is that they're so modern that many of the buildings you probably don't really notice that much. So I don't really remember whole stretches of streets in detail from those times. So, I mean, a lot of the buildings have probably changed, but you don't really notice. I mean, for the Japanese, you're talking about where you live, an apartment block from 1985 is considered incredibly old.
Oh, really?
Living in an old apartment block. So the, or at least in many places in the cities, the turnover of buildings is so fast. I can walk down streets I've walked down many times when I was in Japan before, and I can't really remember what was there. You know, it was a series of modern buildings, and now it's a different series of modern buildings. So it doesn't seem to have changed that much, except with obvious exceptions where there are, you know, big new towers and very impressive modern architecture and so on. So there are specific, you know, big new developments which are obvious.
I think as a Westerner who has never been to Japan, I have a very strong image of what I expect Japan to be like. Maybe the cliche of the sushi and the women wearing kimonos and the cherry blossom. If I went to Japan, would I be disappointed?
I think you can find all of those things, and they're all quite deeply embedded in the Japanese soul in a way. I mean, it sounds a bit pompous, but they're important. On national holidays and religious holidays and so on, you'll see lots of Japanese women wearing kimonos, going to shrines and so on.
Right.
But I think what would really hit you about Japan is not that stuff. It's just how the cities are incredibly modern and sort of very, very, they're sort of essence of urbanness. You know, there aren't many green spaces. They're all very modern and shiny and so on. If you look at British cities, you tend to get a mixed picture, but you get much more preserved old building.
Is it expensive?
Japan, for sure, used to be really expensive. If I go shopping in Tokyo now, I'm struck by most things I buy, I think, are cheaper than in London.
Right.
I mean, London's very expensive.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
Eating out is really cheap. I mean, in London, you're hard-pressed to go and eat out, you know, and pay less than £20 a head, frankly, right?
Mm.
In Tokyo, they have this incredible range. This is the other thing people don't realize about Japan. They all think sushi, like you said.
I know.
They have this incredibly wide cuisine. And that, for sure, they have really posh, expensive, refined, and beautifully presented food. But at the other end of the spectrum, and where most people eat all the time, they have izakaya, which are basically bars that serve food, which are very fun places where you kind of eat as you go along, and you choose a little dish of this and a little dish of that, and you know there's often a
sounds like a bit more like Spanish tapas.
Exactly, and there's often a, you know, a charcoal grill going,
right?
And you get sticks of yakitori and all that kind of thing. So it's, I mean, it's fun.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
I'm speaking to Steve. Steve lives and works in Japan, in Tokyo, is that right?
Yeah, in Tokyo.
How long have you been living in Tokyo for?
About 6 months.
But it's not your first time in Japan, is it?
No, I lived there from 1989 to 1996, so I left Japan about 10 years ago, last time.
Okay, so over that 10-year break, going back again, have you seen many changes to Japan?
Yes and no. A lot of people keep telling me how much Japan has changed in that time, but to be honest, I'm more struck by how similar it is in many ways. I mean, a lot of the shops and the restaurants have changed hands and so on and so forth. And in Tokyo, a lot of the buildings have come down and new ones have gone up.
And different kinds of buildings have gone up?
Well, I think the thing about Tokyo, or the thing about Japanese cities in general probably, is that they're so modern that many of the buildings you probably don't really notice that much. So I don't really remember whole stretches of streets in detail from those times. So, I mean, a lot of the buildings have probably changed, but you don't really notice. I mean, for the Japanese, you're talking about where you live, an apartment block from 1985 is considered incredibly old.
Oh, really?
Living in an old apartment block. So the, or at least in many places in the cities, the turnover of buildings is so fast. I can walk down streets I walked down many times when I was in Japan before, and I can't really remember what was there. You know, it was a series of modern buildings, and now it's a different series of modern buildings. So it doesn't seem to have changed that much, except with obvious exceptions where there are, you know, big new towers and very impressive modern architecture and so on. So there are specific, you know, big new developments which are obvious.
I think as a Westerner who has never been to Japan, I have a very strong image of what I expect Japan to be like. Maybe the cliche of the sushi and the women wearing kimonos and the cherry blossom. If I went to Japan, would I be disappointed?
I think you can find all of those things, and they're all quite deeply embedded in the Japanese soul in a way. I mean, it sounds a bit pompous, but they're important. On national holidays and religious holidays and so on, you'll see lots of Japanese women wearing kimonos, going to shrines and so on.
Right.
But I think what would really hit you about Japan is not that stuff. It's just how the cities are incredibly modern and sort of very, very, they're sort of essence of urbanness. You know, there aren't many green spaces. They're all very modern and shiny and so on. If you look at British cities, you tend to get a mixed picture, but you get much more preserved old building.
Is it expensive?
Japan, for sure, used to be really expensive. If I go shopping in Tokyo now, I'm struck by most things I buy, I think, are cheaper than in London.
Right.
I mean, London's very expensive.
Yes,
you know.
Yes.
Eating out is really cheap. I mean, in London, you're hard-pressed to go and eat out, you know, and pay less than £20 a head, frankly, right?
Mm.
In Tokyo, they have this incredible range. This is the other thing people don't realize about Japan. They all think sushi, like you said.
I know.
They have this incredibly wide cuisine. And for sure, they have really posh, expensive, refined, and beautifully presented food. But at the other end of the spectrum, and where most people eat all the time, they have izakaya, which are basically bars that serve food, which are very fun places where you kind of eat as you go along, and you choose a little dish of this and a little dish of that, and you know there's often a
sounds like a bit more like Spanish tapas.
Exactly, and there's often a, you know, a charcoal grill going,
right?
And you get sticks of yakitori and all that kind of thing. So it's fun.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task two. Go on to task three. You have a minute to read the task.
Finland's educational system.
Yes.
So fascinating thing. So about three decades ago, Finland has an educational system that's doing terribly. And they look around, they go, okay, what are we going to do about this, right? We got to revamp the whole thing. And they decide, for whatever reason, you know, that they were going to focus on equality. And it's not equality of results because they didn't even do tests. They don't do any testing until the age of 16, okay? So no standardized testing, et cetera. Equality of opportunity. So they said, no matter if you're poor or rich or you're in the middle, our objective is to reach equality of opportunity. And by the way, and this is amazing, we are not going to achieve, we're not going to try for excellence. We just want everybody to have a fair chance.
Right. They got rid of competitiveness within their schools.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing so much on pressuring them, you got to be the best, you got to be the greatest, you got to score the highest on the standardized test. They're like, no, we're going to step back. We're going to let you discover what you're passionate about and follow your dreams.
Okay. Now, it gets crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait till you see the results. Okay. They said, you know what? Kindergarten, preschool, canceling it. You're not allowed to go to school till you're seven. You know why? Because kids should be kids. Okay, it gets weirder by American standards. No private schools allowed. None. Everybody has to go to public school, okay? And, but competition? How are you going to have competition? No, we're not going to have competition. Get this. We're going to pay our teachers a decent wage. Okay, and we're going to require them. Now, they're not getting paid outrageous, okay?
Right.
They're just, it's a decent wage, right? But, you know, it's Finland, so they get health care, et cetera, et cetera.
And right? Also keep in mind, they changed the role of teachers. They became much more prestigious. Like,
yes.
it wasn't like, oh, you're a teacher, whatever, you're making nickels and dimes. It was like, oh, my God, you're a teacher.
Now, so this is another mind-exploding thing.
Yeah.
Teachers are now, it's harder to get into a school to be a teacher than it is to get into school to be a lawyer or a doctor. And they have to get a master's degree, and then they can become a teacher, and it's revered in the society. No standardized testing till you're 16. And the list goes on and on. So they're not even participating in the international tests because they're like, tests are silly. We're trying to find out what these kids want to do and give them an opportunity to do it well, right? In the beginning of the 2000, I think it was 2000 or 2001, they're like, all right, you know what, let's test the kids at the end here.
Yeah, it was a PISA study.
The PISA test. Okay, so let's enter them in there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't expect much. Number one in the world. Number one in the world. Even the Finnish thought it must have been an accident.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even trying for excellence. We're just trying to get people a fair chance, right? So they retested several times, not that year, in the ensuing years. Consistently top three in the world. So, and then the guy who is the head of their education department, basically their education minister, comes and lectures here in the US. It's a hilarious story in the Atlantic. He's explaining to the Americans, we don't do competition.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans are like, all right, so anyway, how do you compete? They're like, no, we do cooperation. Like, okay, anyway, so what are your private schools up to? They're like, we don't have private schools. He's like, okay, so anyway, what are your private schools doing? Okay, no, but we don't have private schools. Like, he's explaining the system, and it's not fitting into their head. Like, the Americans are like, I don't. So anyway, the bottom line is what? More competition, right? He's like, it's like, no, that is not the bottom line. It's the exact opposite of the bottom line.
You have a minute now to check your work. Then you will hear the text a second time.
Finland's educational system.
Yes.
So fascinating thing. So about three decades ago, Finland has an educational system that's doing terribly. And they look around, they go, okay, what are we going to do about this, right? We got to revamp the whole thing. And they decide, for whatever reason, you know, that they were going to focus on equality. And it's not equality of results because they didn't even do tests. They don't do any testing until the age of 16, okay? So no standardized testing, et cetera. Equality of opportunity. So they said, no matter if you're poor or rich or you're in the middle, our objective is to reach equality of opportunity. And by the way, and this is amazing, we are not going to achieve, we're not going to try for excellence. We just want everybody to have a fair chance.
Right. They got rid of competitiveness within their schools.
Yeah.
Instead of focusing so much on pressuring them, you got to be the best, you got to be the greatest, you got to score the highest on the standardized test. They're like, no, we're going to step back. We're going to let you discover what you're passionate about and follow your dreams.
Okay. Now, it gets crazy.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait till you see the results. Okay. They said, you know what? Kindergarten, preschool, canceling it. You're not allowed to go to school till you're 7. You know why? Because kids should be kids. Okay, guess weirder by American standards. No private schools allowed. None. Everybody has to go to public school, okay? And, but a competition? How are you going to have competition? No, we're not going to have competition. Get this. We're going to pay our teachers a decent wage. Okay, and we're going to require them. Now, they're not getting paid outrageous, okay?
Right.
They're just, it's a decent wage, right? But, you know, it's a Finland, so they get health care, et cetera, et cetera.
And
right?
Also keep in mind, they changed the role of teachers. They became much more prestigious. Like,
yes.
it wasn't like, oh, you're a teacher, whatever, you're making nickels and dimes. It was like, oh, my God, you're a teacher.
Now, so this is another mind-exploding thing.
Yeah.
Teachers are now, it's harder to get into a school to be a teacher than it is to get into school to be a lawyer or a doctor. And they have to get a master's degree, and then they could become a teacher, and it's revered in the society. No standardized testing until you're 16. And the list goes on and on. So they're not even participating in the international tests because they're like, tests are silly. We're trying to find out what these kids want to do and give them an opportunity to do it well, right? In the beginning of the 2000, I think it was 2000 or 2001, they're like, all right, you know what, let's test the kids at the end here.
Yeah, it was a PISA study.
The PISA test. Okay, so let's enter them in there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't expect much. Number one in the world. Number one in the world. Even the Finnish thought it must have been an accident.
Mm-hmm.
We're not even trying for excellence. We're just trying to get people a fair chance, right? So they retested several times, not that year, in the ensuing years. Consistently top three in the world. So, and then the guy who is the head of their education department, basically their education minister, comes and lectures here in the US. It's a hilarious story in The Atlantic. He's explaining to the Americans, we don't do competition.
Mm-hmm.
The Americans are like, all right, so anyway, how do you compete? They're like, no, we do cooperation. Like, okay, anyway, so what are your private schools up to? They're like, we don't have private schools. He's like, okay, so anyway, what are your private schools doing? Okay, no, but we don't have private schools. Like, he's explaining the system, and it's not fitting into their head. Like, the Americans are like, I don't. So anyway, the bottom line is what? More competition, right? He's like, it's like, no, that is not the bottom line. It's the exact opposite of the bottom line.
There is a minute now to finish the task. This is the end of task 3 and the whole listening test.